This podcast is sponsored by IQ Bar.
I've got good news and bad news. Here's the bad news. Most protein bars are packed with sugar and unpronounceable ingredients. The good news? There's a better option. I'm Will, and I created IQ Bar Plant Protein Bars to empower doers like you with clean, delicious, low-sugar brain and body fuel. IQ Bars are packed with 12 grams of protein, brain nutrients like magnesium and lion's mane, and zero weird stuff. And right now, you can get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Try our delicious IQ Bar sampler pack with 7 plant protein bars, 4 hydration mixes, and 4 enhanced coffee sticks. Clean ingredients, amazing taste, and you'll love how you feel. Refuel smarter, hydrate harder, caffeinate larger with IQ Bar.
Go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Again, go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20.
Hi, this is Steve Roost, and you're listening to Health Tech Hour on UK Health Radio. Each week, we give you the best news, views, and interviews from the health technology world. From CEOs and founders to entrepreneurs and clinicians, the companies and people that are shaping the future face of healthcare. All on the world's number one talk health radio. Hello, and welcome to this week's Health Tech Hour with me, Steve Roost. Each week, we bring you the best news, views, and interviews with the leaders, clinicians, CEOs, and founders who are changing the face of the healthcare industry in the UK and beyond. As regular listeners know, I'm a CEO and founder of a health tech company myself called PocDoc, who partner the show. Their support makes the show happen, so thank you very much to PocDoc. Also, just before we get into it, as always, I'd like to thank everyone listening live. So we're up over 60,000 people listening live to each show, which is amazing, and will be more. There's some exciting news coming down the pipe about UK Health Radio, which I can't share yet because my producer will kill me, but it's very, very exciting. So we'll, you know, in the run up to Christmas, there'll be some big announcements. I'd also like to say thank you to everyone listening or watching on YouTube. We're now well over 1,000 subscribers to that channel. We're across Spotify, Apple, Amazon, and Google Podcasts as well. So thank you to everyone for listening. I also want to just give ourselves a little pat on the back because we've been nominated for our first award. So we've been nominated for the Media Platform of the Year at the MedTech Awards, the MedTech World Awards taking place in Malta. Now, when we started the podcast or we started the show, I never even thought that we'd get close to getting an award. So even being nominated is fantastic. And thank you very much for everyone for making that happen. So today's guest, Amanda Lambert, who's the Chief Customer Officer for Nuffield Health. She's been in the health industry for 19 years, and Nuffield Health, as I'm sure everyone listening, that will be a name that is immediately recognisable to everybody from high streets all around the UK. They are the UK's largest healthcare charity. We're going to get into that because I actually didn't know they were a charity until I started planning this show, which I don't know is like a good point because I actually planned the show and found out they're a charity, or, you know, I don't know whether it's the best kept secret of the company, but we'll find out. So Amanda is 100% focused on improving the experience of Nuffield Health's patients, members and people. Amanda, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm okay. Thank you for having me on the show.
Just okay, or like doing, you know, like
I'm doing
we
well.
Hanging in there?
Yeah, no, I'm more than hanging in there. Don't worry, I'm good.
Okay,
yeah.
Good. All right. So first of all, it's great to have you on the show. I think that it's, as we talked about before, just before the show went live, it's a really interesting time to get someone from an organization like Nuffield Health on the show. Obviously, without trying to like doom-monger the whole thing, there's a lot of kind of macro trends out there at the moment around healthcare, access to healthcare, backlogs, waiting lists, you know, people getting less healthy, so on and so forth. And I think from what I understand, my own sort of understanding of Nuffield as a kind of a consumer or you know, potential patient or customer was very different to when I started to kind of look into it, you know, as a sort of trying to research the show. So why don't we start with the charity aspect? Let's just start there. So why don't you walk us through like why is it a charity? Where did that come from? And, you know, like why is that kind of important to, as part of what Nuffield do?
Well, we've always been a charity, actually. We've been around for 65 years, so we're a long-established charity. And we are what is described as a trading charity. So, yes, we do provide services that people pay for, which is perhaps what people know us for. But actually, we have a strong charitable purpose that everything we do is around building a healthier nation. And we reinvest. We don't have shareholders. So the great news is not having shareholders means we can reinvest all our money back, not just in the services we provide that are paid for, but also in a ton of services that reach those who need it most but can't normally access it. So we have goals around reach and representation that mean we focus on getting to those living with low resources who don't normally access healthcare or can't access it. But also we've created a measure called the social return on investment measure that we've done externally with an external academic body. And that makes sure that we measure the good we do from helping build a healthier nation, which is our charitable purpose. So that enables us to check that anything we do that's free of charge, we measure, we count, so that we're always providing public benefit.
Okay. So like when the charity was set up 65 years ago, which is not an insignificant chunk of time, you know, the world was a very different place 65 years ago.
Yeah.
What was it? Was it? It can't have been set up the way. I mean, there's been so much change. Like,
you're going to test my knowledge now, Steve.
Well, you know,
I wasn't around then.
No, I wasn't suggesting you would have first-hand knowledge. It was more maybe there's some, you know, info passed down.
Actually, Lord Nuffield started it, and I think back then it was actually more of a care home trust type approach.
Okay.
So it has evolved. It's always been in the healthcare space, but it has evolved to what it is today. And actually, we've evolved even more over the last 5 to 10 years. So most people know us as either a private hospital group or a fitness and wellbeing gyms.
Yeah.
They interact with us. What people probably don't know is actually we are both, and even we're more than that. So we're about providing the whole health and providing all services that relate to that. So we look after the whole you. That is from preventative, maintenance, keeping fit in the gym is obviously good for your health and wellbeing.
Yeah.
As well as then prehab, prior to operations, rehabilitation. So we've got services that go from obviously the hospitals and the fitness and wellbeing centres, but also we provide physio services, mental health services, health assessments. We can get checked every year to understand your, I suppose, some tests around your bloods, etc. Some things you'd be familiar with, all of which help people keep healthier. And then in addition to that, a reference, we do things free of charge. We have a number of programs that we provide into the community, and we target trying to reach those who wouldn't normally get access to those services. So we've got things like COVID rehab program, joint rehab program, trying to really target those needs that aren't met in society.
Okay, that's a hell of a lot of stuff to be getting on with, to be quite honest with you. That's quite a lot of stuff. And I also read a story, part of the research, that you guys actually build hospitals or are building hospitals.
Yeah.
That's quite a big task.
We've got 37 hospitals, some of which we've acquired, but actually more recently we built our hospital from scratch at Bath. So we have built the private hospital that is linked to the NHS Trust, literally built from scratch. It's actually got some amazing stories related to it, because where it was built is actually on the line of where the London fire ended. So when they were building, they found, you know, evidence of where the soot line ended. So quite a lot of history that was uncovered as we went through that. I did loads of building problems, as you can imagine, but actually lots of really good heritage and working closely with the Trust.
Is that stuff going to be featured in like a TV special, you know, like they did the London Crossrail?
Well, we did tours while we were waiting to open, because obviously imagine opening a hospital isn't just the physical building of it. You then have to go through all the accreditation to get opened.
Yeah.
So we were taking some of the private medical insurers around, and one of the guys, I'm sure he should get a job doing tours, because he could tell you the history of every element of London that went around.
Right.
The building next to it was actually the building that Sherlock Holmes' TV programme was filmed on, when Sherlock Holmes jumped off the top of the building.
Oh, what, when Benedict Cumberbatch jumped off and faked his death.
Yeah.
Okay.
So there's like loads of stats that we can definitely put into a book.
Also, do you know what, it'll be great for like visitors to the hospital, you know what I mean? They've got a lot to go around and learn about while they're like waiting.
Exactly. Yeah, we've got lots of images on the walls of the London fire and all that kind of stuff, so yeah, it's good.
And so like just to kind of touch on your role a little bit, and then we can circle back around to some of the themes that you talked about, because I'm really interested in what you do in the community and the prevention, and that obviously crosses over with what we do at PopDoc and other things. But what is a chief customer officer, and what's under your empire, you know, your empire of improving people's experience, and what is kind of not in that empire?
Yeah, I mean, actually, chief customer officer probably doesn't do it justice. So I probably do need to correct my way. I haven't been in healthcare for 19 years. I've actually only been in healthcare since last April. Prior to that, I was in mobile telecom. So I actually come from a very consumer-facing background, which we'll touch on, because obviously digital technology is key to what we're trying to do. And telco has obviously been through that journey before. But in my remit, it's broader than just customer, but I look after all of our customer propositions and offerings, what services we offer and where we offer them, the customer experience, the trading performance, so how all the service lines perform, all our sales and commercial relationships. So
it comes up as like a commercial piece as well, right?
Yeah, completely. Okay. Yeah, the NHS relationship, making sure that we've got the right strategy for that. And then all the way through the whole of the technology team. Right. And the bit that might now sound a bit odd under customer is the people team. It's actually because we believe that obviously our product is our people at the end of the day. Right. So really connecting the people and customer together, making sure we create a great internal experience that then also delivers a great external experience.
That's quite a remit. That's quite a lot under that one, for sure. So what brought you across into healthcare?
I've always been passionate. So actually on a personal level, when I was looking for a new role, I was looking to join something that had a sense of purpose. So being a charity was a big part of why I joined. Feeling like you're doing something good for the society you live in was important to me. Right. Obviously, you don't have to be a charity to do that, but I think it helps so you know you're not just making shareholders richer. In fact, I think my sister said to me, stop working, making rich men richer. So I think that's a good little piece of advice. So I joined because of that, but also really passionate about well-being. And actually, I'll share a personal story that my mum actually had open heart surgery about 5 years ago.
Okay.
And she's very healthy and fit. And as a result, was able to deal with the surgery brilliantly, respond and recover. If she had not been healthy and fit and had been invested in her health and well-being, that would never have happened. And right. I could share the same. It's a genetic condition. I could have the same genetic conditions. So I believe a lot in the whole health and well-being focus, and I've driven that. I think I mentioned to you earlier, my previous life, I was a chief people officer for a period and really drove a wellness agenda in the organization that I was doing that role for. So it's a passion personally. I believe in it, and I really wanted to work in an organization that was making a difference.
Cool. I mean, that's one of the reasons why we started PopDoc. So I completely vibe with that one. So let's go back to this charity piece for a second. What do you, having worked at, like you said, in telecommunications, which I'm guessing was like a public company, probably quite large, you know, maybe not a public company, but big,
privately owned,
yeah. Big old consumer, you know, corporate company. The fact that Nuffield is a charity, but there are other healthcare organizations that are obviously not charities, even in the same space as Nuffield. How does that charity status kind of express itself as a point of difference, either at the patient level, the customer level? Like, how, you know, you, if you've got some case studies or stories, that'd be super interesting, because I do think it is really unique.
Yeah, it is. And let's start with it drives us internally. So, and I'll compare it to the previous organization I work for. Commercial organizations try and seek to have a purpose that they can get all their employees galvanized around.
Yeah.
And honestly, when you're just making rich people richer, it's difficult to create a purpose that can have a lot of meaning for people.
Right.
Like, we are privileged, I think, in Nuffield that we have an amazing purpose that is believable, because it's about creating and building a healthier nation. So everything we do is aligned to that purpose. And so the whole organization knows that its job there is to build a healthy nation in everything we do. Now, sometimes that might be through paid for services, but absolutely front and center is how we're making it achieve our purpose. But of course, we all know that there's all the community aspects that we do as well. And we know that every penny we raise is about reinvesting in what we do rather than going to shareholders. So it drives us very strongly internally. Now, interestingly, we don't use it, which is why it probably is the best kept secret. We don't use it externally because we don't really want to trade off it. Like we want it to be what we're about, and we're doing it for the right reason.
I think it also is like, you are a charity, but I do think that, like, you the more you trade off of it, the more you put yourself at risk of all of the kind of
Yeah.
misunderstandings about, like, well, if you're a charity, why are you charging me 20 quid a month from a gym thing? You
Exactly.
know, and it
Yeah.
just kind of creates a lot of opportunities for people to be critical.
You're so right. And actually, we did some research recently just to check that we weren't missing something that we should be doing. And the research is exactly what you just described. It's like if you choose to donate to a charity, you kind of know what's happening with your money. You know you're making that choice. You're right. You enter into a different territory, and people actually care about what it means to them. So people told us, "Don't tell us you're one. Just show us you're one by doing what you do," which is what we do.
And I think that what's really interesting about once you understand that it's a charity, it kind of that broad church of services makes sense, because you're trying to support people across the whole of the wellness
Yeah.
journey or health journey, right? Like you said about your mum, you know, yes, you can provide private hospitals that can do surgery for people that are sick, but why not also then try and stop people getting sick and
Yeah,
provide those
exactly.
services? Now, they might not necessarily be as financially lucrative or whatever, but you're not in it for the profit. So
It doesn't
actually
matter.
being able
Yeah.
to provide people, but actually, did you think it creates a kind of a freedom for you guys to do what the right thing is, as opposed to
Yeah.
necessarily the financially most prudent?
Compared to where I've come from, 100%, it definitely enables you to do what's right for the organization, to make the right choices. We always say there's no one telling us what to do. This is our choice. So, make the right choices. And what you've described is exactly the strategy. We call it connected health, but we're trying to connect all of the elements of your health journey so that all the services basically give you better health outcomes. And let's face it, if we're successful in our goal and our purpose for building a healthier nation, in theory, people should need less hospital procedures. So we're not doing
But
it
I mean,
to
no one
drive our
got,
own profit.
I'm pretty confident. Well, I mean, this is a massive generalization, but no one got less healthy by going to the gym and doing exercise.
No,
I
exactly.
mean,
Well, although
you know,
I did get
there's
injured,
edge case. Yeah,
but
there's edge cases, right? There's like, oh, I lifted the weight and I got injured, or like, you
yeah.
know, whatever. But just like broadly speaking, in the you know, that it's generally net positive.
Yeah, exactly. And that's exactly what we're trying to do is really join all of it together, and also make it more easy to access. So, which probably brings us a little bit into some of the tech stuff. I think one of the things that has probably stood out for me when you come in from outside the sector is healthcare is quite complicated for the patient. Navigating, again, my parents, if I use them, my dad's got all sorts of ailments going on. It's quite overwhelming, and particularly because people do tend to be a bit older when they hit a lot of these issues. You're feeling vulnerable, you're feeling scared about what's going on, and then you're trying to navigate what is, let's face it, a pretty complex system of consultants, GPs, providers, insurance if you are going private. So our goal is really, well, one of our goals is to try and make it easier for people to access things by simplifying it and making
And
the experience better.
how's that kind of manifesting itself, or has manifested
Oh,
in?
I would say we're on our journey. I don't think anyone's mastered that completely. If I was able to sit here and say that, then I think we would be probably world famous, because if you listen to any healthcare, I suppose, expert or people working in the sector, everyone talks about what we need to do and we're all on that journey to doing it.
Yeah, of
But the
course.
way we're approaching it is definitely starting with the customer experience. So what is it that customers need by identifying the journeys that they go through for the different elements of how they interact with us, and then using technology to help with that? We actually, probably a big shift for me was I've always come from a sector where you talk about a digital first strategy. So coming in, got a digital background, I was like, we should have a digital first strategy. Very quickly I realized that's not right, because all healthcare is provided by humans. So actually we are human first. We describe it, but digitally enabled is the approach we're taking. So we really are looking at how we can use technology to, I suppose, to change a number of different things. First of all, making the experience better. So making it easy when you want to contact us to have digital tools available to do that. So we've just been launching online bookings for consultant appointments, online gym classes bookings. We're wading our way through all our service lines to make them available online to book. But very much about that simplification, making it easy, giving me choices about how I can access things with you. But then,
I love that, which is like, I'm guessing for you coming from the background, you know, but I mean, my background prior to this was basically VC backed tech. So I
right.
similar kind of, you know, a fair way back, longer than a year, but still the idea that, like, an online booking system would be something that would have to be implemented. Is
but I think that's so true in healthcare. I don't know if you found that yourself, that the as a sector, when you first joined, that it's probably quite far behind other sectors in terms of adoption.
Well, I think it's like, I think for me, it's so complex that there's so many complexities around the provision of healthcare, because it's so, each problem is completely unique to each person, and there's so much risk in the system that has to be managed around the provision of that healthcare, that it's very, very, very hard to allow anything to kind of, virtually impossible to allow anything to kind of to test and iterate. It's really, 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 really hard. And so it's completely understandable that people rely on tried and tested methods, and moving away from the incumbent is a big deal. So whenever people say like, oh, you know, what's the biggest competition? It's like, what's the incumbent? Like that's anyone's biggest competition in healthcare is the incumbent, which is the way it's currently being done predominantly with the NHS. So I think it's like there's also fragmentation and there's issues around funding and all these other things that make it just a very, in the UK at least, a very complicated picture as to around the adoption. I do think the NHS has done what it can do. You know, there's been digital accelerators and the National Innovation Accelerator and the Clinical Fellowship and, you know, stuff like that, which is all like all well and good and shows that they're very, very keen. But like, you know, POCDOC was on the NHS Digital Accelerator, which is, you know, they identify health tech that they want to fast track into the system. And on the same cohort that we were on was an online booking system for GPs. You know, like, it was great business. Like, of course, online booking. Like, what? I mean, what are we? Of course, you book online. That's a great idea. Yeah. Let's do that, shall we?
Yeah, it is quite amazing. And you're right. There are times where, if I felt like, you know, rewind a few years, to be proud to say we'd have launched online booking would be a bit like, really? But I think it is quite breakthrough.
It's complicated.
It's not a breakthrough idea, you're right. Because even online bookings for consultants, it's not simple because they have medical secretaries, there's GP referrals, there's private medical referrals.
There has to be a paper trail, and there's no point seeing a consultant until you've had test A, B, and C done. And if you've not had A, B, and C done, there's no point having the appointment. So, and they also, they want all the information shared. So it's really, really not easy at all.
No, but hard really work for the user, though, don't you think? So I always think you're doing all the work. You're doing all the work, but you have none of the access to your information as well, because all the information is kept with the healthcare practitioners and providers, but you're the one who does all the legwork, ring up these people, ring up those people, chase for that appointment, and then try to connect it all up yourself as well.
So it's hard.
Our vision is, how do we solve that? Now, just like any tech solution, that's not going to be overnight. It's going to be iterative. We're going to keep adding to it, but we are definitely, we've been really working on how we transform the technology team, actually, because that was obviously a key start point, is that we were delivering things in big programs. And of course, therefore, it was taking a really long time to deliver. So we literally just finished reorganizing to move to a proper agile way of working.
Sprint.
Yeah, setting up squads so that they're aligned to outcomes. And we think that will free up the tech team, although a bit scary for them because it's a new way of working. We think it will free them up and they'll be more connected to the people in the organization that they're supporting, rather than kind of tucked away in the technology function.
Yeah, I mean, the impression that we're a medical device developer, and obviously we've got our lateral flow, but it works with an app, and then we've built a cloud-based diagnostics platform that we can integrate directly up with electronic health records and all that kind of good stuff. So it's a real sort of full system. And, you know, whenever you develop a medical device, you start with user requirements, which in software land are called user stories, right? And so you go user requirement, but it's like laid down in law. Like, that's how, now not everyone does it that way, obviously, but like, you know, that you go user requirements, design requirements, verification, validation, acceptance criteria, like it's all, you know, and then that just flows into your development, which is, I love that. I think it's just exactly the way to go, as opposed to these, because that means that you're, in order to draft your user requirements, you have to be intimately connected with what your customers, users, whether they're internal, external, whatever, how they want it to be before you even kind of put the shovel in the ground.
Yeah, completely. So we talk about becoming more beneficiary-led. So I should also explain, we don't call our customers customers. We do interchange. We call them beneficiaries, because we actually provide to payors, like people who are paying the bills, like the employer, the private medical insurers, but we also provide, obviously, to people paying directly. The person who uses our services is the person who benefits from them. We also provide services to people who don't pay. And therefore, we call them beneficiaries because they are the people who benefit from everything we do.
That makes sense. So, okay. So my producer is giving me the hurry up sign because we have to go to a commercial break. So we will be back in 2 minutes with Amanda Lambert, the Chief Customer Officer of Nuffield Health. We'll be back in 2 minutes.
This podcast is sponsored by IQBar.
I've got good news and bad news. Here's the bad news. Most protein bars are packed with sugar and unpronounceable ingredients. The good news? There's a better option. I'm Will, and I created IQBar Plant Protein Bars to empower doers like you with clean, delicious, low-sugar brain and body fuel. IQBars are packed with 12 grams of protein, brain nutrients like magnesium and lion's mane, and zero weird stuff. And right now, you can get 20% off all IQBar products, plus free shipping. Try our delicious IQ Bar sampler pack with 7 plant protein bars, 4 hydration mixes, and 4 enhanced coffee sticks. Clean ingredients, amazing taste, and you'll love how you feel. Refuel smarter, hydrate harder, caffeinate larger with IQ Bar.
Go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Again, go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20.
Hello and welcome back to this week's Health Tech Hour with me, Steve Roos, and Amanda Lambert, who's the Chief Customer Officer of Nuffield Health. So, Amanda, what I'd like to talk about now, just to switch it up a little bit, is let's talk about how Nuffield and the NHS interact, right? Because I think that there's obviously there's like a media kind of angle where they kick private healthcare, you know, as much as they can, and like there's like a this kind of concept of it's like the NHS versus private, which I know is kind of ridiculous, but like what you know, how obviously you work with the NHS probably extensively, I imagine, but like why don't you tell us how it actually is as opposed to what generally is sort of thrown around in the media?
So we do work closely with the NHS. And actually, before I joined the charity during COVID, the charity played a massive role in supporting the NHS when the NHS were taken over by COVID patients. So we took on cancer patients for them and really provided a real backup service. So I think there's a good relationship. We provide, I suppose, a number of different areas, predominantly elective recovery or elective care operations. So we work closely with trusts. If they need more capacity in certain areas and certain fields, then we have the availability and we provide that to them. And
so just to pick up on that, so what that means is basically there's a backlog or whatever, there's patients waiting for what is an elective, does knee surgery count as elective or what's elective?
Yeah, they would do,
knees, hips, stuff like that. What that means is Nuffield's, because you have hospitals, because you have surgeons, because you have clinicians, you can come in and actually take those patients so they'd be treated earlier.
So we've been working with all the trusts on helping them bring down their wait lists over the last 2 years.
So it's a pretty that sounds pretty symbiotic to me,
It is. Obviously, it's very local, so it does vary locally depending on the need, the availability. So they will work with all providers in the same way. We provide a good overflow service, particularly to helping with the backlog. What we're also starting to do, though, and actually we talked earlier about what we call our flagship programs, which are our free of charge services. We also provide those to the trusts. So working with over 20 NHS trusts, we actually provide our COVID rehab program, which we developed off the back of COVID. People really struggling with the long-term effects. So in 60 of our fitness and wellbeing centres, we provide that. Over 4,000 people have benefited from it already.
Wow.
And so we do that, but we're also just starting to launch other services as well through them. So ideally, like we talked earlier, we provide an end-to-end everything to do with your whole health. So we would love to expand and do more to support the NHS from prevention right through to rehabilitation.
So why do you think, and I'm genuinely curious, why do you think that there's this, repetitive sort of trying to artificial antagonism that people try and create in the media, which is like private stuff kills the NHS. Like why is there sort of this sort of artificial antagonism where actually it seems like you're just sort of all in the same fight together, arguably, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, I don't really understand why people do think like that. Do you think there's more people on the wait list than one hospital or one trust they can deal with in their area? It's crazy to not work together as a combined set of facilities that provide the services to society. It's weird that you kind of get pitched against each other's competition. But for me, it doesn't make sense. We're all here to try and help the people that we serve, and do that in the best way. So, yeah, I personally don't get it. I think it's way more to do with politics than it is to do with the reality.
Well, I mean, obviously the NHS, I always love it when like politicians talk about the NHS and like, you know, like it's like one thing, you know, and it's like, it's not, it's this.
It's complete, so local. Yeah.
Yeah, totally. And like, you know, so no, I think it's sort of interesting because during the pandemic and then post-pandemic with the backlog, like you said, you know, I think that there's, and from speaking to lots of people on the show and off the show, as just generally being out and about meeting people, you know, it does seem like it's moving more towards a kind of a spectrum approach as opposed to a kind of a binary. So obviously you've got NHS on one side and then you've got pure, you know, private customers paying a private medical insurer and coming that way. And then there's sort of like a spectrum in between where it's just about treating people and looking after people. And it doesn't necessarily matter whether it's in hospital A or hospital B or rehab center X or wherever, right?
Or where they start their journey. So I think what we're seeing for a lot of people is that they might start with private for diagnostics because the wait time to get diagnosed. So we definitely see people using the diagnostic services, paying for them themselves in reality. They're not doing it under private medical insurance.
Right.
And then some of those, once they get diagnosed, will skip back into the NHS. And again, I feel like I'm using my parents' loads here, but they're of that age where lots of things go on. You know, my mum and dad probably have always come from an era of the NHS. They've never had private medical insurance. They're working class people. But actually, my dad needed a hernia operation. It wasn't really going to be done on the NHS or would take too long. He decided to use the savings to pay for it. But then anything serious, he goes back to the NHS and carries on through that system. I think people are using it in a way where, actually, do you know what? I can afford to do it and this is the right thing for me. And even that then relieves pressure on the NHS because it's removing him from their system in terms of a standard operation.
So that's a really sensitive one, isn't it? And I don't want to like hold your feet to the fire or anything because I know it's a really sensitive one. And obviously it's sensitive because of the NHS free at the point of care and all of that amazing stuff that is amazing about the NHS. But there is a kind of an area where like this area of like, if you have the ability to seek private treatment for something, it then does remove you from the NHS waiting list, which I think is something that I haven't seen any politician even come close to talking about or tackling, because I assume it's just such a sensitive thing to even sort of go down the route of. But I do think it's sort of interesting, you know?
It is, yeah. No, and obviously, I was talking specifically about my dad. I think he'd have been sat there for years waiting because it wasn't deemed an urgent operation. So he'd have just been sat in that system. So for him, it definitely worked. And I think people are making the choices that are right for them where they can afford to.
Right.
But yeah, other than that, we obviously continue to support and provide the services directly to those who can't. And as a result, we have seen a lot more people access services with us who wouldn't normally, because we've been working so closely with the NHS.
And what's your kind of view around, you know, digital health propositions that sort of increase access, and PopDoc being an example, in cholesterol cardiovascular testing or other things? Like, is it what you said before, which is around where it makes sense, yes, just implemented in a sensible way, or anything else?
Yeah, so I think, you know, it's easy because obviously coming in, so I do come from a digital background, but in telco is digitalize everything.
Yeah.
And you realize you can't do that. So it's definitely about selecting the things that people want to have, I suppose, have better ease of access to. So a few things we've done are things like triage digitally, because that does enable the front end of the process to work more quickly. It's actually how people want to access it. We've seen things in fitness and wellbeing actually that were taken off. And particularly content, we're finding that, I suppose, again, you know, the access to health information is not universal to people. And so being able to provide content that is easily digestible, understandable, because again, I think that's the other thing about healthcare, is it can be quite complex to understand.
Oh, there's so, definitely a need for like signposting. I mean, we see that just in a small, you know, in our area of cardiovascular health and cholesterol and things like that. Like you need to be led, or that journey to understand what means what and what you know, the big so what of the whole thing.
Yeah, completely. You know, we recently did something with menopause, actually. So a big focus to the Menopause Advice Hub, far exceeded our expectations in terms of the access that people came to. And also even things like, we haven't done this yet, but in my examples of things I keep saying we need to be getting on and doing is using videos to show people what like an MRI is going to be like. It can be quite scary, some of these things for people coming into hospitals. So we can use digital and content to, I suppose, supplement the physical experience.
I tell you what, I mean, I had an MRI, a head MRI, nine to 10 months ago. And I wish someone had shown me what that was going to be like before I walked in. Because I was like, when they put the you know, the Louis the 15th man in the iron mask thing on my face, I was like, this is, I wish some, I'm not claustrophobic at all. But I got very, very claustrophobic there for the first time.
Completely. I had one years ago, and the noise, the sound of it.
Yeah.
So like explaining that, you know, funny enough, I've had surgery recently myself on my shoulder, and my consultant said that he's been doing loads of research. He's a professor, about how the whole customer experience can make a massive difference to the clinical outcome. And so that for me would be a good example. Like the more you can remove anxiety, fear, and unknown for people through using digital tools, techniques, capabilities, be it, it was easy to book, easy to find the hospital, easy to park. Actually, you know, that you spoke to me in the language that I wanted to be spoken in. There are 13 languages spoken in the UK, but we all speak mainly to our patients in English. So again, one of our visions is if we use digital technology, then we can make it translatable for people. So all of that will make them feel like less anxious, which in turn should make their outcomes better.
Yeah. Well, like one, we had there's a couple of people that have been on the show before. So there's a guy called David Loughran who runs Concentric Health, and they're all about digitizing the consent piece of it. Because he was a surgeon previously, either a surgeon or a registrar, I can't remember which one. But basically his view was like, we rush around in the morning before surgery, just getting people to sign bits of paper. They don't really understand what's going on. And actually, to that point, the more they understand, the better outcome will be. And there was another guy called Dom Rabin, who founded Exploro, which is a digital VR type experience / gaming experience for kids who are going to have. Do you know Dom and Exploro?
No, but I can imagine VR for kids would be so transformative and helpful.
Like,
so scary for them.
Well, he was like saying one of the kind of insights that they had was that for a kid, because with an MRI, to get back to that, if you move, you've nixed the whole thing, basically. So it was so hard for me as an adult not to move, let alone for a young adult or a child. And just them being able to understand that means that then they don't have to repeat the repeat the session, right? So if you, like, MRI time is really expensive. So if the session gets cancelled and doesn't work, you've got to go back to the beginning again, which increases time and someone else's appointment gets, you know, pushed back and so forth. So I totally agree with all of that. That's super interesting.
Yeah. We also think digital can be used for connecting people to each other. Because again, there's research, and definitely like you think about this in fitness, the reason people go to gym classes is because exercising with other people keeps them motivated, keeps them going, keeps them interested. But it's true also in supporting each other. So, and actually we've been working with Careology on an app, which actually helps them support us, better support patients who have got cancer, family, friends, clinicians all work together to provide the support. So it's bringing people together and making sure that we're using digital to do that. So it enables them to have a better outcome again.
And like, presumably during the pandemic, that was rather hard. So I might get told to go for my final commercial break. So we might have to come back to this in a second, but what happened to you? Cause I know that you said that you got overflow from the NHS during the pandemic, but were the gyms were shut as well?
Yeah, they were shut. Although some of the gyms were used for cancer patients. So we did actually manage to, but not all, but we did launch our 24/7 app. That's probably, if we're going to an ad break, we can come back to it. But definitely, this is a good example of development. So I wasn't here at the time, but we went.
It's okay. You can still take credit for it.
I'll take credit. We've been given the wave.
I'm kidding. Okay. Cool. Yeah, let's come back. So look, let's go for the 2-minute ad break, and then we'll come back with the final part of this week's Health Tech Hour with Amanda Lambert, Chief Customer Officer from Nuffield Health.
This podcast is sponsored by IQBar.
I've got good news and bad news. Here's the bad news. Most protein bars are packed with sugar and unpronounceable ingredients. The good news? There's a better option. I'm Will, and I created IQ Bar Plant Protein Bars to empower doers like you with clean, delicious, low-sugar brain and body fuel. IQ Bars are packed with 12 grams of protein, brain nutrients like magnesium and lion's mane, and zero weird stuff. And right now, you can get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Try our delicious IQ Bar sampler pack with 7 plant protein bars, 4 hydration mixes, and 4 enhanced coffee sticks. Clean ingredients, amazing taste, and you'll love how you feel. Refuel smarter, hydrate harder, caffeinate larger with IQ Bar.
Go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Again, go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20.
Hello and welcome to the final part of this week's Health Tech Hour with me, Steve Roost, and Amanda Lambert, the Chief Customer Officer of Nuffield Health. So before we went to the break, before we were urgently ushered into the commercial break by my producer, we're going to talk about your 24/7 app. Then let's talk a little bit about the pandemic. And then I want to use the last part of the show to talk about the work that you guys are doing in the community, particularly and reaching hard to reach patients, because I think that, again, that speaks to the role of you guys as an end-to-end healthcare provider, not just a private hospital kind of play, right? You're actually trying to help people across that entire journey. Well, to the extent that people listening know or don't know, but hard to reach patients are one of the kind of perennial problems that the NHS faces, which is a lot of the time the people that need the most help are the hardest to reach. And it's extremely expensive to find them and to get to them. And actually anything that can help on that process is the NHS is really crying out for. So anyway, let's start with the 24/7 app and finish up with all the community stuff.
So I was claiming credit for the 24/7 app.
You can do it. No one knows. It's only live radio.
I think
no
my team might know. But yeah. So prior to COVID, we didn't have a fitness app. So okay. Obviously our gym shut, people couldn't access them. We knew people still wanted to keep fit. And so in a really rapid short space of time, the guys launched an app, which is our 24/7 app. Right. And it's basically like a virtual gym membership. So it's provided obviously to people who have physical gym memberships get it included, but for a much smaller charge, people can access it who aren't members. It provides content, workouts. You know, I know Peloton are obviously very well known for doing that kind of thing.
I mean, I've heard of Peloton, yeah.
But they're quite expensive.
They are massively expensive. Like, yeah, and quite hugely expensive.
Because you've got to have the equipment and the subscription. So
yeah,
this is
massively
a much
expensive.
More affordable way for people to access. And also when you're on the go. So if you're not actually in the gym, working out at home, working out while you're traveling, lots of workouts and content and general health and wellbeing advice on there. So it's gone really well, actually. So it went well during COVID, but it's continued to go well since. We've actually now exceeded 100,000 members on it, which is
pretty
really impressive.
That's great. Yeah, so that's really good, especially if they're paying. That's massive.
Some of those are existing. Yeah, some.
Well, yeah, no, but you know what I mean. Like they are customers. They're not.
They're
that's
proper
not just
users.
Like
they're,
yeah, exactly.
They're beneficiaries, as we said. Earlier.
Beneficiaries,
so,
rather. I'm sorry.
Yeah. No, it's okay. So we've got more plans for that, actually, because we think we can partner with some of those communities. So linking on to your next question. So obviously there is an issue with access to digital technology, which I know from my previous life in mobile, but actually we do think that digital is a way of getting to more people, because there's the physical distance to sites, but there's also people's, I suppose, nervousness about accessing health, wellbeing and affordability. So digital content we've already talked about. We think our 24/7 app could be used more to develop specific content for specific communities. And we're starting to partner with organisations to do that.
That's
so we're in
idea.
Early conversations with social housing charities as well to see how we can develop content that they can then get to their members and their community to help reach those who we would never normally get to.
That makes sense. And what let's talk a bit more about the community, the hard to reach sort of work that you guys have done. So how's that been going?
So COVID rehab, we already talked a little bit about. So that's probably been one of our big successes. Like I said, 4,000 people. But more importantly, not just the number of people who've been through it, but actually the benefits. So about 30% of people who went through that said that they saw a significant improvement in their health. So we know that we're not just reaching people who aren't our traditional paying members or paying customers. A lot of those were people you would call living with low resources. So they're getting right into the system, accessing those services, and getting improved health outcomes. So that's one area. And we've got a couple of those flagships I mentioned. We've also got a joint pain program. But over the summer, we also started to talk about movement. So you said earlier, people don't tend to get unhealthy by going to the gym. There's lots of proof that movement in general is a really good way and good foundation for health and well-being. So
there's a reason why the Apple Watch tracks movement, right?
Yeah. And actually, we all know it's not just necessarily, I know there's lots of stats on how much you should exercise a week, but it's actually getting moving is more important than anything else. And often exercise can sound quite intimidating to people. I think for a lot of people, it brings back memories of PE classes that some people
cross-country enjoy. Cross-country runs in the snow.
I loved a cross-country run in the snow.
Did you?
Okay, I know I'm abnormal.
Yeah. I wouldn't say that's like going to be the general view of those.
No, maybe,
I like swimming in really cold water, so I'm also similar.
You're also unusual.
Yeah.
But for a lot of people, it's not movement is more relatable than exercise. But we also know, we've seen our Healthier Nation Index that we run, where we get some really good insights about what people are doing, and we realized that people weren't moving enough. Mm-hmm. So we did a few things over summer. We did the move 5 minutes a day. So just small habits, create them. But we also recognized that young girls, in particular in our research, were less likely to exercise after they leave school. So they go through a period where they stop exercising because they pull out the system. And so we ran a Move Together program that we got all of our fitness and wellbeing centers across the country to run that wasn't for members. It was out in the community, targeted mainly at teenage girls, and it was all about movement and getting them out there.
Because I think you guys have do you call your gyms health and wellbeing centers? What you call them?
Yeah, okay. There's 114 of them across the country that are consumer facing,
which is a lot.
We also have probably another 100 services we provide to corporates as well. Some of those include on-site fitness areas.
Because like 114 locations, and you already have those physical locations, there's like a huge amount. And obviously there are some, again, with this like idea of a blended model, the people that can pay and want to pay will pay. But you already have this location and being able to run classes and, whether they're free of charge or however it works, but just community related, hard to reach things, advice around lifestyle, well-being, movement. I think it's amazing. You guys have such a fantastic position in these communities, right?
Yeah, you're completely right. We want to use the physical footprint in the community as our way of getting to access into those communities. Now, it's not just as straightforward as it might sound having a physical presence, because again, most people probably know us then as a gym.
Exactly. My dad had a huge stroke when he was 43, and I was in my early teens, and he and this was related to cardiovascular disease, and undiagnosed cardiovascular disease is one of the reasons why I'm so passionate about what we do at PogDoc, because I believe that access to testing, access to your cholesterol levels, connected with working within healthcare provider pathways, could have identified and enabled him to be treated, before he had a stroke, obviously. Yeah. And but the point I was going to make was that he is really intimidated by gyms, has been since, because of his frailties post-stroke, that he wouldn't ever necessarily choose to go into a gym because there are lots of really, really fit people in the gym. So yeah, it is sensitive, right? Because you don't want to, it is hard, right? Because there are always going to be people, a lot of the time people in the gym, generally there's going to be people in there that are really quite fit. And like, if you're not in that frame of mind and you maybe are a little bit low on confidence, that can be pretty intimidating.
Yeah. In fact, actually, one of our goals is to make things easier to access. That's not just the physical access and the digital technology, but one of my visions is that we make it somewhere you feel that you can access. So you feel it somewhere that it's okay to. And I would say it's not just intimidating because you might be frail, but people go in and say, I don't see people who look like me.
Exactly.
Means I don't feel like I belong. So
we definitely, and that can be across. I'm sorry. I talked over you. Carry on.
That's okay. We definitely want to be somewhere where people feel that they can come, regardless of who they are, background, and what their attitude to exercise is.
Yeah, I think that people like me is really interesting because that goes across all kinds of different things, right? Like people that are as fit as I am or unfit as I am, people that are the shape that I am, people that have the ethnic background that I am, the gender that I am, or so on and so forth. That's a really hard one to crack.
Yeah, but it's a good vision. So I think if you have something that says aim there, then as long as you're progressing towards it, you're making it better than it is today.
Because I think that, like, there's obviously this kind of school of thought, which is like, suck it up and just get in there and do your work and blah, 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 you know, and like, okay, it's all well and good. Like, you can be that way. But the reality is that there are so many people that may want to do it if it's accessible in a different way. Why wouldn't we strive to make it accessible for them?
Yeah. And as part of that, accessibility might mean that it's not physically in our site. So over some of the Move Together campaign was actually the sites used their skills, but they went out into the community and ran fitness, like in the park, for example.
Yeah.
So people didn't have to have that, I've got to go to the gym.
It is intimidating. Like, I know when I'm not in good shape, I'm like less motivated to go to a gym when there's loads of people in good shape. Like,
mirrors
I just am.
Everywhere.
Yeah. And it's like, you know, you just, but a lot of the gyms are kind of set up that way. Like, that's not necessarily going to work for a lot of people.
Well, it's not going to work. If you want to build a healthier nation, which is our purpose, then we've got to make sure that we can appeal to a broad audience. And if they don't want to come in, then it's also about how we can use activities to go out. And that requires partnering. So we've been doing a lot of work partnering. Up in Manchester, some good success. We took on the Manchester Institute of Health Performance, which is, in theory, in the Elite Performance Centre. It's where all the footballers go to have all their tests. But we've used it. It's right next to Moss Side. So we've used it as a community hub, and we run community outreach programs from there. And we're getting some really good successes of partnering with different other charities and bodies that we can then get our services out to people who we would never normally reach.
That makes so much sense. Again, I mean, that's kind of one of the reasons why one of the visions of what we do at PocDoc, which is like, instead of trying to get people to go to a GP center to have a blood test done, why don't you try and work out a way that they can do it at home, or they can do it in a community center? Like, we've tried the bit about getting everyone to go to a GP surgery, and there will be people that go, but there's millions of people that don't and don't want to, and they still would benefit from having those tests done. And that's how we feel.
And how do you find, like, the technology access, though? Because, of course, that is another potential area, isn't it?
So it's really interesting, actually. So we've got a number of different partnerships that we're working on with the NHS. One is with Novartis and Chelsea and Westminster, and there's a number of others. And one of them is involving a primary care network in the Northwest and an academic health science network in the Northeast. And the premise is, you can increasing access to lipid testing will identify more people who are undiagnosed cardiovascular disease. It will allow them to get treated. You'll have better health outcomes. And it will also allow you to find and target and test hard to reach groups that otherwise we're not testing. So they're kind of like a zero in terms of being tested. And we're in discussions. I can't, you know, say too much, but it's very exciting. And one of the pushbacks, ironically, that we had from an NHS professor was exactly that. He said, well, your test is an at-home test, and it involves a mobile phone, and, you know, that's not going to work for people. And I said, well, actually, we're taking a blended approach, which is that we have networks of pharmacies, we have high street retailers, we have community centers, and actually even GPs. The fact that it's a lateral flow that provides a quantitative result with the results on a smartphone or tablet, and it automatically syncs back up to wherever it needs to get synced up to, that can be done anywhere. But by doing it that way, it means it can definitely be taken outside of the surgery, which means whether it's at home for the people that want to do it at home, or if you want to walk to your local coffee shop, or if you want to walk to your community center or your pharmacy or wherever, we've built up this network of locations. I think it'd be really interesting to see if there's some to talk about the community outreach stuff that you're doing to provide that alongside. And so this blended model makes sense. And that's how we're addressing that. Because, again, one size doesn't fit all. What matters is the goal, which is, how do you test as many people as possible? That's our goal anyway.
Yeah.
And so there will be people that self-select and want to do it themselves, but there'll be a whole bunch of other people that would prefer not to. And actually, you have to cater for them, because if you can't, then you kind of like, what are you even doing it for?
Yeah. So basically, you're similar to us in that you're using technology is the enabler, but it doesn't mean it's the sole solution.
No.
You're actually taking that technology enablement and taking it out to where
it's about
people
the outcome.
Are. Yeah.
It's about the outcome, right? Which is like, cardiovascular disease, single biggest killer in the UK. The single biggest gating factor to getting treated is a 5-marker lipid panel.
Yeah.
Like, the single biggest gating factor at the moment. And there's a huge backlog. And so we're trying to solve for that, which is, and we believe that we've developed a way to deliver a step change increase in access. but it's not tied to have to do it at home. Like, you can do whatever you want. The idea is you get the results in 6 minutes, and that means that person can be then triaged however you want them to be triaged. So yeah, we feel very similar, which is technology is an enabler to solving these major problems. Obviously, we come at it from a testing diagnostic kind of access perspective, but it's a similar type of thing. And I think that that's what I've always felt strongly about technology wherever I've been, is that technology is an enabler to solving a problem. It's not the solution in and of itself. There has to be a problem that you're solving with it. It isn't just the solution in and of itself. And there's so many examples of stuff that gets spun out of academia where, like, they haven't thought about the customer and they haven't thought about the problem. They've got really kind of cool and interesting technology, but like, it doesn't really solve the problem. I mean, in diagnostics, you get a lot of loads of spin outs, which is like, I've made the most amazing complicated testing box, right? But it's like £3,000 for the testing box, and it's like 50 quid for a test. It's like, well, I don't know how that's going to scale, but you know, it's a great box.
Yeah, no, completely. It's funny because within my old organization, I worked quite closely with Google, and they are all about using tech to solve problems. They start with what the problem is. Solving what problems using technology is what they're all about.
Well, it goes back to the user requirements, right? And the user stories. If you can't draft a user requirement or a set of user requirements or user stories, then you're probably taking a technology first approach as opposed to a customer first approach or beneficiary first approach, I would argue.
Yeah, I completely agree. Sounds like there's lots of similarities then in the way your ethos of making things easier to access as well, and whatever way you can do that.
I think access to healthcare, there's obviously lots of problems within healthcare, but access, solving access or contributing positively to improving access is a hugely noble and important task, wherever you come in at it. You know, because it goes across everything. It goes across every socioeconomic strata in the country. And we know that if people have access, better access to healthcare, they have better health outcomes, they have better lives, they produce more, they're more valuable members of society, they're happier. You know, it's just a massive virtuous circle.
It's also so multifaceted that we've talked a lot about the word access. And like I said, it's as simple as making it easy for me to contact you to do it.
Exactly.
It's giving me actual access to the healthcare.
Yeah.
But like we said, it's making it feel accessible.
Yes.
So I feel like I have a right to access it, like I belong there. It's quite it's one word.
It's hard. Because like older people, like my parents are like this. My producer's saying we've got 2 minutes to go, so I'll do this quickly. But my parents are like, well, I don't want to bother the GP. I'm like, well, that's a problem of access, right? It's like, at what point do you feel what's going on with you is bad enough that you, quote, want to bother the doctor, right?
Yeah. That's a societal thing, though, isn't it, from the generation they grew up with? Although my parents have got to the point, though, I think they're on first-name terms with their GP, so they're definitely moved to the other end of the extreme now. To the point when she comes in surgery, she doesn't even get she just comes out and waves at them because she knows them so well. And I really love the work that she's done for them because she has spotted lots of things early on by keeping an eye on and doing lots of tests on them. So it proves that it works.
Yeah, absolutely. So thank you very much, Amanda, for coming on the show. Amanda Lambert, Chief Customer Officer for Nuffield Health. If people want to find out more about what Nuffield are doing, where do they go? Your website?
Nuffieldhealth.com,
Okay, cool. Thank you to everyone for listening. Much appreciated. And we will be back again in a couple of weeks with another live show. But check out this show if you want to listen to it again on Spotify or YouTube. But anyway, thank you very much for listening.
We'll
see you again next week. Thanks.
This podcast is sponsored by IQBar.
I've got good news and bad news. Here's the bad news. Most protein bars are packed with sugar and unpronounceable ingredients. The good news? There's a better option. I'm Will, and I created IQ Bar Plant Protein Bars to empower doers like you with clean, delicious, low-sugar brain and body fuel. IQ Bars are packed with 12 grams of protein, brain nutrients like magnesium and lion's mane, and zero weird stuff. And right now, you can get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Try our delicious IQ Bar sampler pack with 7 plant protein bars, 4 hydration mixes, and 4 enhanced coffee sticks. Clean ingredients, amazing taste, and you'll love how you feel. Refuel smarter, hydrate harder, caffeinate larger with IQ Bar.
Go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Again, go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20.